League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
And through.
And he's made it! He's done it! It's a grand slam roar at Augusta National. Rory McIlroy on his knees, bent down in emotion, clutching his head. He's won the Masters. He's won all the grand slam events. He's the sixth in the history of the game to enter golf's greatest group.
Greetings, sports fans. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Today's Wednesday, April 16th. This is episode 165. Please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, follow us on YouTube, follow us on Instagram. Take a look at some of our videos. We got stuff rolling through every week. Be sure to leave us a comment, a question. We'll get back to you. Tonight, we go around the world of sports. We're going to start it off with a tradition like no other. That's right, the Masters. And Nance said it on Sunday, Rory has his masterpiece. He ends a 11-year majors drought, winning in the first sudden death hole against Justin Rose after choking a four-foot putt to win on the 18th hole. He completes a career grand slam. He becomes only a sixth golfer to do it. Gene Sarazen, Ben Hogan, Gary Player, Jack Nicholson, Tiger Woods, and now Rory McIlroy. It's a very exclusive company. It's a $4.2 million win for him in money, but the money doesn't mean anything for him at this point. It's the win he needed. He finally gets a majors win. Kev?
Jack Nicholson, great actor. I don't think he's ever won a major.
It would be Jack Nicholson.
I said Nicholson?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Nicholas, of course.
We said it last week on the podcast. There's no reason for Rory to lose this one, and he tried everything he could to lose on the back nine. You know, Thursday he goes out there, and it looks like he's putting up a really good round. He's four under, and then winds up two double bogeys down the stretch, puts one in Race Creek, winds up with an even par 72. Still in it, you know, six back. Justin Rose put up a seven back, I should say. Justin Rose put up a 65 first round. He was great on Thursday. But Rory, to his credit, bounced back, shot 66 Friday and Saturday, got himself to the lead. He had a two-shot lead going into Sunday against DeChambeau. Opens up first hole, double bogey. Second hole, he parred the par five. DeChambeau birdied it, and all of a sudden, Rory's down by one. But then Rory, to his credit, recovered. He birdied 3, 4, 9, and 10, gave himself a little bit of the cushion. Bogey on 11, you know, that same end corner. Darren, we know 11. Is bogey awful there?
No.
It happens, you know?
13.
He lays up.
He played it safe. That's why it's so funny. He played it safe.
He never plays it safe. He always goes for everything. He lays up to 97 yards.
And plop.
And he mishits it.
He puts it in the water.
He mishit it. It wasn't even like he came up short or anything. He literally just mishit it because he hit it about 30 yards right of where he was aiming.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He was just trying to hit the center of the green. And you're like, mud on me.
You say you lay up, you're nice position, nice wedge, put it on the green, two putt, walk away with your par. Nope, double bogey. Then he bogeys 14, and now he's leaking oil, you know, every cliche you could think of. Then he gets a 15 on the second shot of 15, that hook around the trees.
Perfect.
Amazing.
Perfect. Last Sophie on the green, leaves himself a makeable eagle.
We've all hit that shot, but by accident and nowhere near a green. Anyway, We've all hooked it that much, but never on
never on purpose.
Oh God.
I thought if he hit the bird, I thought the eagle putt, if he buried that one, tournament over right there. He birdied, still kept it alive. Birdied 17, which I thought was another thing that won him the tournament. Then he's on the fairway, 125 yards on the 18, puts in the sand. Could not get up and down. Meanwhile, Justin Rose.
Great sand shot, by the way. Great sand shot. Great he gave himself 4 feet.
Terrific.
To win it, and he didn't even touch the cup.
Yep. In the meantime,
he pulled the left, I should say.
In the meantime, Justin Rose with 10 birdies, 4 bogeys, shoots a 66. DeChambeau falls apart. He wound up bogeying 3, 4, a double on 11, a bogey on 12 to shoot himself out of it. Some of the other guys up close, Connor shot 75. Lowry shot 81. I mean, Patrick Reed shoots a great round, but he was too far back. Scheffler just never got anything going. He just stayed where he was. I mean, it was Rose that made a great recovery after shooting 75 on Saturday. Put himself in position, gets himself into the playoff, and Rory has the same exact shot, same exact yardage from the fairway on 18. This time puts it close enough. Rose gets the par. Rory steps up, drains the birdie putt, the emotions come out, and he wins the Masters.
Yep.
And, the only thing I could say is that I think most people were rooting for Rory. Nobody was rooting against Rose.
He's a classy guy. No one dislikes Joe.
And the reaction of Rose afterwards, I mean, he backed off. He let Rory have his moment. And what's the first thing he does? He comes up, he congratulates him, this big hug. Mm-hmm. He knows how much this meant to Rory.
Absolutely.
And, pure class by Rose. McIlroy finally does it. And I think this takes all the pressure off. The major drought is over. He's got his career Grand Slam. This could free up Rory to win a couple more majors here.
He could. He's 35 years old.
Yeah, he's still young in golf.
He's been in golf forever, but he's 35.
Yeah. And how many guys still win, a couple of majors, 35 to 42, say?
A lot. It definitely takes the albatross off his back, so to speak.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Darren, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, again, you covered a lot. Crazy final day, crazy week, actually. 3 eagles, 4 double bogeys. No one with 4 double bogeys had ever won the Masters before.
Yep.
Until this one, right? DeChambeau did what I thought he was going to do the whole week.
Choked.
But he waited till Sunday. I don't like him when he has to pick spots and get distance right. I like him when he gets to outdrive people. And even actually won, he tanked one. And both him and Rory ended up in the sand. And DeChambeau crushed his. He's like, a little wind got me. And it was like watching Tin Cup for a second. But his popularity has grown so tremendously because he is such a fan favorite now. DeChambeau is becoming beloved because of his social media, and he high-fives every fan, and he's out there very loose. Actually went on to the tee second to make sure that Rory could feel his emotion. I thought it was pretty good, actually, pretty smart. Like you said about Scheffler, he battled all weekend. He just couldn't get it together. He would hit a big putt, but then he would just have trouble with a mid-iron or something like that. But he tried. He only finished 3 strokes out for a guy that did not play well. Just put in perspective how good Scheffler is. Rose had the hiccups early on 4 and 5. That set him back. He was 6 strokes back at that point and then made his run to give Rose the credit he deserves. And then the bogey on 17 really killed him because of Tiger. Rory gets his birdie. So used to assuming Tiger does these things.
Yeah.
Rory gets the birdie and the bogey and they get into it. Reed has the eagle on 17. But if you look at him on 13, he has the short putt for birdie, misses it completely, then misses the tap in on the way back. Those 2 strokes cost him the playoff. And you said it right. He was waved back. But if he doesn't blow 13, I mean, no one expects him to hit the shot in 17.
Oh, no.
In the fairway. But he could have been in the playoff. And the one guy that I'll sit there and say looks the prettiest out there right now is Oberg. Just effortless.
Yep.
The ball just goes. He's smiling the whole time. And then he tanks 17 and 18 because he's within 1 stroke. And that triple bogey on 18 cost him $514,500 in prize money.
Yeah.
That's what it cost him. He lost $500,000 because he tripled on 18. And you're like, oh, my God. But the one thing I'll say is that he just has, there's something about him that you just enjoy watching with him. Then at the end, you know, little credit to Nancy Nimmelman, 46 words in 7 minutes. They let the emotion take control. They didn't talk, which was great.
Yep.
One of the coolest things I saw, remember, you saw him hug the wife and the kid and all that. And at the end, he hugged this other woman for a long time. You know who that was?
No.
Dustin Rose's wife.
Wow.
You want to talk about class from both him and Rose and that family? That was Dustin Rose's wife he embraced at the end when nobody knew who that woman was.
Wow.
That's amazing. That's how much these guys love each other. I'm just saying.
Yep.
Another quick point. Just on Nick Dunlap. Shoots a 90 on the first day.
Yeah.
21-year-old kid. Doesn't drop out like everybody else does when they shoot a 90. He stays. And shoots a 71 on day two.
Breaks par. Yep.
Breaks par. 21-year-old kid earned the respect of a lot of the tour members, particularly Billy Horschel went out there, praised him. Talked about how karma's going to help this kid down along the way for staying in it. Thought it was a nice little touch that you wouldn't talk about the guy to finish near last, but really a great moment. Two other quick Masters things, guys, okay? One I talk about every year, but one I'm going to talk about for the first time. This is what Rory gets, okay? He gets the custom fit green jacket, a record $4.2 million of prize money, which you pointed out already, which doesn't mean anything to him, but it does. Honorary membership to Augusta National. A gold medal and replica Masters trophy, a lifetime invitation to the Masters, a locker in the champions' locker room, access to the members' only driving range, and an annual invitation to the champions' dinner. And then the last thing I wanted to point out, and again, I know I'm boring the hell out of you with this stuff, but I love this. This is what it's like at the Masters. Sandwiches, egg salad, $1.50.
Yeah.
Pimento cheese, $1.50. Pork barbecue sandwich, $3. Masters Club, $3. Chicken salad on honey wheat, $3. Ham and cheese on rye, $3. Classic chicken, $3. All the breakfast sandwiches, $2. Except and $2 for the mixed fruit, $2 for the coffee. Soft drinks are $2. Bottled water, $2. I mean, they are stuck in time. Chips, $1.50. I mean, we got to go to this thing. I mean, this is
beer's only $5.
You spend all your money on the ticket, but you know, and there's no cameras.
No cameras, no phones.
So you can't do anything. But there is something so I know that it's Augusta, Georgia. No one thinks of Augusta, Georgia as the place to be. But there's something so magical and special about this tournament. And that's what I had. G, anything else you wanted to add to this?
Yeah, I mean, even though he had four bogeys, the thing that wins it for him is the fact that on the holes he needed to play well, he hit the good wedge and he hit the putt. And, you know, that's been the knock on him all these years. He'll drive the hell out of the ball. He'll hit great irons. But when it comes time at Rory, is he going to hit the wedge shot? Is he going to make the putt to win it? And he did it on 18, but he did it in the first playoff hole.
On 18?
But you know what I mean.
Absolutely. No, same hole. That's what I'm saying. Same exact hole.
Yeah.
Similar shot. Yeah. And he hit it.
And that's when it comes down to golf at this level. That's what makes the difference between these guys. This week, he was able to do it. I'm not against Rory, by the way.
I know you're not. I'm just messing with you.
He's one of the – listen, he's a top five golfer in the world. I don't hate him, but – in this particular match, I was rooting against him because I thought Justin Rose was a great story on that final day. I really did. The way he came back to play that.
Hey, listen, if I had Rose to win and not Rose top 10, I would have been all over it with you, G. But since I had him in the top 10, it didn't matter as much.
The way that Rory was so shaky in that final round where, you know, there were two or three holes go a different way. 18th, not even a question. It's done.
13.
You know,
13 was the one that was inexcusable.
He plays, you know, par golf on some of these holes. 18th, not even a question mark for him at that point. But listen, it was a great finale. Again, you know, there's something watching the Masters the whole time. You know, I watched many hours Saturday, many hours Sunday. It's just, It's just different. It's a different golf tournament than everything else. It really is. So.
You know what? It's also the first one, right? It gets you into the mood for golf of the year. It's the, not the first tournament, but the first major. It's the first one where you actually have appointment television for. And I think there's something special about it also in that respect.
I think you're right.
May's a PGA now. Yeah, that's one that sort of is forgotten. June, Father's Day weekend.
It was always kind of forgotten, but now it's worse because they want the FedEx Cup to be the big thing.
Yep. Yeah.
And because it used to be August, and you'd have that last major, but now the last major is the British.
Yep.
Which is really forgotten because it starts at 3 a.m.
We love it.
Yeah, I mean, wake up at 5, I watch it for an hour before I go to work, and then on the weekends, I'm able to tune in, you know?
It is the hardest, though, to keep track of as we're going through the 4 days, though. That is a great point, though.
And the funniest thing is, for me, and it only happens once every few years, but I love it when the U.S. Open's on the West Coast. I get to come home from work and watch some golf, which I love. I love, like, getting home at 5, and there's still guys on the course for another 3 hours. When they did it out in Chambers Bay, or they do it at Pebble, or they do it, you know, somewhere on the West Coast, it's always great. But again, we'll get to that more, and that's not for another like 4 years till they're out west again. But I love that stuff.
All right, let's move it over to the NBA. So we have the six teams in both leagues that are
seven now. Both seven teams won last night.
Yeah. I was going there. The seven.
I'm sorry, sorry.
That's right. The seven team made it in yesterday. Orlando gets in, the Warriors get in. That's a seven team in each, and now we have the little playoff going on for the eighth. Games today, games tomorrow to figure out who the eighth seed is.
The round robin.
Kev, you want to talk to me about some NBA? We'll start it with you.
Well, we'll start with the Knicks. We know they're playing the Pistons, the 3-6 matchup. And really, when you take a look at the other teams there, the Pacers were 4. The Bucks were 5, and the Pistons were 6. I think the Pistons give the Knicks the best matchup or in favor of the Knicks. You know, great, great story with the Pistons. You know, 21-22, they won 23 games. Then they were down to 17. They were down to 14 wins last year. That's 54 wins the last 3 years. And this year they go out and win 44 games. Tremendous turnaround. They've got one of the really, really terrific young players in Cade Cunningham. 26 points a game, 9 assists, 5 rebounds. And does it night in, night out for this team. They've got some guys, you know, some veterans that have been around for a while. Tim Hardaway Jr. Malik Beasley is a second leading scorer. He's averaging 16 a game off the bench. They've got Tobias Harris, Dennis Schroeder off the bench. So they do have some veterans. But I think this is a team that, as a whole, just hasn't been there yet, you know, especially going from 14 wins to 44. I think this is a matchup that the Knicks can take advantage of as long as they contain Cunningham. If they don't let him go crazy and score 35, 40 points a game, I think the Knicks can match up very well in the series. I think the Knicks have been there, done that the last few years. If the Pistons win a game, I think they're lucky. I think maybe, you know, If everything goes well for the Knicks, they win 1 or 2 at home. They'll lose 3 or 4 at Detroit, win the other one, and come back to the Garden and win game 5. I think they can and should win in 5. I think that would be so important moving ahead in the playoffs, because we know Tibbs only plays 7 guys, I think, in the playoffs. These guys are going to be playing heavy minutes. You want as much rest as possible. Like I said, I think personally this is the best matchup. It would have been a lot more difficult if it was the Bucks or the Pacers.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%, Kev.
Yeah, I mean, also what happens with Detroit is, like, you know, they've got some bigs, but Durin, they're not really offensive threats that are going to expose Cat defensively. And you don't have to, because of the size of Cunningham, you don't have to put Brunson on him. You can put Brunson on a wing. And now you can sit there with Anunoby and Bridges taking turns on Cunningham to slow him down. And I think that helps. The other guys are spot-up shooters. I think the loss of Royal Ivy really hurts this team.
Oh, yeah.
He's a scorer, and he got hurt earlier in the year. You know, again, I think the Knicks should roll. I think I think the interesting series is the 4-5 in this one, because I think Indiana and Milwaukee, and I know that Milwaukee's going to be missing Lillard to start. He's banged up, but – But I think Milwaukee wins this series, and I think that we're going to have a – I think Milwaukee versus Cleveland, and I think the Knicks against Boston, and that's kind of where we figure out what kind of season the Knicks are going to have this year.
I mean, do you see any chance of the Cavs or the Celtics going past five games also?
No, I don't. I'd be stunned if they went five. I don't think
– Sweeps are very much on the table.
I think sweeps are on the table for both teams, and it's not that – Orlando is just – they're missing something. Miami obviously missing something with the trade of Butler. And I have Miami just penciled in right now because they're up 16 on Chicago. But that could change. I mean, they have to play Atlanta tomorrow. So it could be Atlanta too. But I just don't think either one of those teams pose a threat to Cleveland. The Cleveland we saw during the regular season. What Cleveland's going to do in the playoffs is going to be we don't know. They haven't proven themselves to be a playoff juggernaut yet. But we'll see.
Yep.
We'll see what they bring.
All right, out west.
The West is
going to be wow.
I mean, you know, Golden State, Houston, right away, 7-2. Well, I think the seven's better, and you get the you know the Draymond versus Brooks matchup right away where they hate each other, and it's going to be Butler and Curry against you know these great young players on Houston. It's going to be a really cool series, you know. The blueprint was given last year by Boston on how to beat Luka. Let's see if Minnesota can execute it. Yep. If you make Luka play defense. Now, here's the thing. Boston also throws out Tatum, and Boston throws out Brown, and Boston throws out White, and Boston throws out a bunch of guys that can score. Will Minnesota be able to match that? But if they can force Luka to play defense, now we see what happens to them in the short series. But the Lakers, you know, you feel like they're in good shape. The Clippers have been one of the hottest teams out there. They're going to open up.
Red hot.
Yeah. And they're going to open up against the best player in the world in Jokic and a new coach.
Yeah. We talked about that last week. That was shocking. Yeah.
And I don't see any chance of the eight doing anything against the one. I think the only seven or eight that has a shot is Golden State, in my opinion. And Golden State versus the Lakers in the second round, if that happens, would be a lot of fun to see if it's the Butler-Curry or the LeBron-Doncic combo that's more lethal. It's just fun.
Sadly, I have to root for Curry.
I'll be rooting all over Golden State. And I think Curry ruined the NBA. One of the guys. Him, LeBron, and Popovich. There are three people I think ruined the NBA. Those are them.
Yep. I'm in full agreement with you there.
The three-on-none fast break. Pull up from three. There you go. You know, the easy bucket doesn't matter. But so we're going to get more into the NBA playoffs as it happens. But
we got
a lot of cool things there.
When the series start, we'll be posting
and predicting
about the playoffs, and all three of us will be predicting that on our Facebook posts.
Exactly. Yep,
absolutely.
One last point in the NBA. Yep. Actually, two. Isaiah Thomas goes off on LeBron for warming up without a shirt on prior to the game, just saying how unprofessional and what are we doing here and what the hell's going on. Isaiah's been known to throw a punch during a game, but apparently he didn't like LeBron warming up without a shirt on. I don't disagree with the fact that you should have a little bit of decorum out there, but I think the world is different. I think that I agree with Isaiah to an extent. I was just surprised he made such a big deal about it.
Were there fans in the stands yet? Was it close to game time, or was it an hour before
Not
the game?
Not really. It was about an hour before. There really wasn't anybody there.
I mean, there's nobody there. I mean, as much as I want to knock James every chance I can, that's just not worth picking on him. If it was 5 minutes before the game, he's out there warming up without his uniform on.
I agree.
That'd be a lot different.
Yeah, Isaiah went off. Second thing, the Phoenix Suns fire Mike Budenholzer, okay? One season into a 5-year, $50 million contract. So they owe him $40 million. They still owe Frank Vogel $24 million. They owed Monty Williams $20 million, but I think a lot of that got waived when he got hired by Detroit. So I don't know the exact final number, but I don't know what Phoenix is trying to do with coaches. But I've never seen $64 million at least owed to two different guys over the next couple of years. And you bring Budenholzer in a 5-year deal, you give him 1 year. I understand that it didn't work out, and I'm sure it had a lot to do with his battles with Bradley Beal. But I'm a little surprised that they didn't give him a shot, guys. I thought that they would give him at least 2 years to see what he could do.
Oh, yeah, especially with a 5-year contract, yeah.
It just seemed like it was a little quick. And that was what I have for the NBA.
All right. Let's move over to the NHL. So Rangers and Islanders both knocked out. In the East, Montreal two points up on Columbus. Montreal playing right now. They're up 3-2 on Carolina with about 3 minutes left. So a win and they clinch, and that
or
would
a tie. Even a tie clinches.
Yeah, they would have the 8 seed.
Overtime loss, any point.
Yep. Any point. Out west, Minnesota and St. Louis get in.
Don't get Darren? Me started. Yeah. Darren? All right. Hockey. For the first time, no original American team of the original six has made the playoffs ever. 83 years. Yep. And for the first time since 67, we do not have the Bruins or the Red Wings in at the same time. So it's usually you get one of those two has made it every year since 67. So this is not a year of legendary matchups and exciting first-round matchups. I'm going to get to the West in a minute. Right now what it looks like is Ottawa-Toronto. It looks like Florida-Tampa, which will be a battle. Mm-hmm. Okay, Colorado-Dallas, which is one you can look forward to. LA-Edmonton. Let's go LA. Devils Hurricanes, the only local flavor, but it's hard for me to imagine the Devils competing without Hughes.
Yeah.
Washington versus Montreal, most likely if they don't give up two goals in the last 3 minutes. And then at West, we got Vegas, Minnesota, and then Winnipeg. First time they've ever won the President's Cup. Okay. They get St. Louis. So that's the matchups. None of these are household matchups, but think about Winnipeg, St. Louis. We get Binnington, Hellebuyck, first time since the tournament. We got those two playing against each other again. And it was a pretty exciting tournament with the U.S. versus Canada. So
yep, it was
something to bring in. But the interesting part of this one is now one represents an American team, and the one that was representing Canada, and the one that was representing Canada now represents a Canadian team. Thought it was a little bit interesting. Columbus trying to do it for Johnny. It looks like they're going to come up short, G. And then just to talk about the Calgary Flames and their league-high 14 overtime losses. One less of those, and tomorrow night's game would have meant something. But Dallas scored with 22 seconds left last night, down 2-1, where that knocked them out. Because even if they would have tied last night, if they would have held on, if Anaheim would have held on for the last 22 seconds, the Flames would have gotten in with a win tomorrow. So this is what life is as a Flame fan, but I can't complain too much. They had a much better season than we expected. Like I said, I mean, I guess Colorado, Dallas, Florida, Tampa, the probably two of the best first round matchups you can really look at right now.
I would say so.
Yeah. So again, we're going to make our predictions.
Yep.
We're going to start that tomorrow. As soon as we know who wins Montreal, we'll start putting those up and get those out.
All right.
You know, just a shame without Rounders, without Rangers, it's just very lacking. And the Devils, like you said, without Hughes, just you feel like they're going to be a one and done here.
Yeah, there's no appointment. There's no appointment playoff TV. We're hockey fans. We're going to put it on. We're going to watch. But it's not going to be like, oh, I got to get home for this one. Oh, I got to make sure I want to be in front of the TV as this game starts. It's going to be catching moments here and there because there's just no local flavor.
It's really going to be the somebody or one or two teams during the playoffs start to do something incredible that catches our interest. That's going to be the NHL is going to need to hook us in to watch all these games.
That's a good point, Kev.
Rather than just, it's fine, I'll throw it on in the background.
I mean, just think about it. There's no New York. There's no Philly to root against. There's no Boston to root against. I'm just saying, as a New Yorker, right?
Yep.
You know, you just don't have some Chicago, Detroit teams that were like legendary teams. You just don't have these huge markets that you kind of rely on. And though Dallas is a big market, Miami's a big market, I'm not trying to say they're not. LA being the only real big market, and Toronto, obviously, up in Canada, it's just not the same. It just loses something when it's Carolina and Tampa and Winnipeg and Denver and Edmonton. These are not Ottawa. These are not markets where people have a huge fan bases that travel. And that's hopefully we get good playoffs. Hopefully we get some good game sevens that we know we're going to tune in for. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. All right, let's head over to a little baseball. Kev, want to start us with a little Met talk?
Yeah, Mets lost the series this week to Minnesota 2-1. They lost 4-3 in 10 innings today after coming back and tying the game late.
They got robbed in this game because there was a play at first where he was out and they had no challenges left. He got a safe call. Buto went to argue it, and the runner scored from second on the ground out. They got robbed a little bit today.
Yeah, but still, it's the offense. I mean, the pitching's been fine despite, Canning had a miss today because he was sick. They had to open with Brazoban, and then called up today was Hagenman.
Yeah.
You know, eight runs and 10 innings in the minor leagues this year. He gets a call up because they just needed an arm. He actually gave him 3 innings. Just what you needed from a filling guy. 1 run. I mean, he pitched fine. He'll be demoted. You know, Stearns, you know, did the right thing here. He demoted Kranick today to bring up Hagenman. Tomorrow, he can then put Siri on the DL and replace him with Kranick. So, you know, just one of those little smart things that I'm sure most general managers would do. But, you know, that's just making sure you know the rules of manipulating your roster properly.
I did it perfectly.
Yep. That being said, it's a batting. I mean, you know, you take a look, Alonso, we know how great he's been so far this year. 365 he's up to now. 5 home runs, 21 RBIs. Next highest RBI guy on the team, Nimmo with 9. Next best batting average, Torrens, 275.
You got Soto coming out and complaining that he's not getting pitched the same way he did last year. You can't do that.
Yeah,
you're making that much money, the highest paid player in baseball. Don't
and,
do that.
And
I know Soto's going to hit, and he's going to be great. I'm not trying to say that, but just watch your step, because the Met crowd will boo you. They'll boo you in the second and a half. This is not a they're not a warm hearted group. They'll come right after you if you start acting up.
We saw it with Beltran. It took Beltran a long time to recover from Wainwright's
curveball on the shoulder.
Yep, you know. Nimmo, Lindor, Soto, you know they're going to hit. The big thing is going to be, you know, Vientos needs to get over his early season issues here. And to me, you know, a guy like Vientos, 9 walks, 14 strikeouts, and 62 at-bats. So it's not like he's flailing away and looking hopeless up there. I think he's hit some bad luck. I think his luck is going to have to turn around here.
McNeil he's got to lay off that slider away. It reminds me of Soriano a little bit sometimes, though. He steps in that bucket trying to jack a slider away out a lot.
Yep.
And I mean, you're right. It hasn't been awful, but in a couple of big spots, he's tried to do it.
Yep. I mean, it's not 62 at bats with 24 strikeouts where he looks lost. You know, that's what I'm trying to say. You know, to me, it's give the kid a chance. You know, he had a terrific year last year. We're 3 weeks into the season. You know, just a matter of getting some of these offensive guys on track. And with all that, you know, I see a lot of Met fans complaining, oh, this team sucks, you know, they can't hit, they can't do this. They haven't played the strongest schedule. They're off to an 11-7 start. I'll take that. Nothing wrong with that.
No, absolutely. They're playing well, and their runs are given up against them, and the Padres are the 2 best in baseball. Yep. And Senga looked great. I know it's Oakland, but Oakland's offense is pretty good. By the way, Montreal just won, so they clinched it.
Montreal's in,
by the way, guys. Oakland's offense is fine. It's just that they don't have a lot of pitching. So, I mean, they look – Senga looked great on Sunday. Great on Sunday.
He went 7, which was big.
Oh, absolutely. And he looked unhittable. I mean, you know, and the leading home run hitter in baseball right now resides on that Athletics team at Soderstrom. So or Soderstrom, however you pronounce it. He should be a defenseman on Detroit, but instead he's playing first base for the Athletics. He seems like a big Swede to me. But anyway, beside that, playing real, real well in that respect. You know Lindor's going to hit. You know Soto's going to hit. And they're going to need that because at some point Pete's going to slow down.
Yeah.
So someone's going to have to carry the team the rest of the way. But you got to love what you're seeing from the pitching staff right now.
I agree. Again, 3 weeks in, you know, usually for me, the first time I want to look at this, really look at how a team is performing is the end of May. So at least you get 5-6 weeks in before you're really starting to look at who's playing how. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, these guys are going to go through 3-week stretches where they're not good throughout the entire season. So, you know, I don't want to overreact. No. I think Vientos, he needs to hit. You know, I think the Met lineup needs him to hit.
Yep.
But at the moment, there's enough that they're getting through even without a lot of the names you talked about really playing well. So at 11-6 or 7, whatever it is, you know, I want everybody to hold on a little bit because we're way too early in the season.
Exactly.
You can't they worry yet.
20 games yet. So let's, you know,
and your Yankees.
Listen, you know what? Judge hit his 7th tonight. They give him the win, actually. His on base is 500, though. I mean, you know, I know he hadn't hit a homer in 10 games, but he's getting on. He's hitting. They pitch around him a ton. Rodon's been good. I mean, he lost the game against San Francisco because Lee got him twice, but he looked great in that game, except for that bad pitch to Lee, the two bad pitches to Lee. He looked good. Clark Schmidt came back 2 years ago. I'd never sit there and say, well, thank God Clark Schmidt is back, but here he is. Fried has been the ace that we need so far. He's been every time you need him, he comes out. They just swept the Royals. I know it's not the greatest team in baseball, but you get a sweep, I'll take it. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday sweep against the Royals, you take it. After losing 2 out of 3 to the Giants. You know, there's a lot to like. I mean, about what you've seen. Dominguez starting to hit. Even though I had a bonehead play tonight where he didn't slide into second and they overturned the call on him because he's a moron. But, you know, just slide into second. You would have been safe. You know, Grisham, you know, streaky, as you remember as a Met fan watching him in the that playoff series, when Grisham gets it going, he gets it going. Bellinger hasn't hit yet. They're still winning. Goldschmidt's getting singles only, still winning. Chisholm's got 6 homers, tied for 3rd in the league with a bunch of other guys, but he's still hitting like 200. Volpe got a big hit tonight. I mean, you know, they have enough guys. The lineup looks like it's lengthening, G. That's what I'm really trying to say. If Dominguez hits, the lineup looks length. Looks like it has more length.
I will tell you this, though. I hate all these different lineups. Guys flipping, flopping all over the place. Boone, come up with something that you want to do, and let's do it.
Well, Boone and Cashman suck. We've gone over this for years.
Goldschmidt hitting 5, hitting 1. They don't know where he's hitting. Chisholm hitting behind Judge, which I hate. I know he's got 6 home. I don't care. You know, Volpe, how did Volpe become a 5-hitter all of a sudden?
He isn't.
You know, listen, I know there Dominguez has not come out like a house on fire, so he's at the bottom part of the lineup
he's
right now.
He's fun to hit, though.
Okay, I know. It's okay.
He's up to 275.
You know, but yeah, I just hate I hate the whole, you know, Goldschmidt, Bellinger, Judge, Chisholm. We don't know where the hell these guys are. Who's one? Come on, Boone. Start getting this lineup together. Pitching's looked good. I mean, the way Fried and Rodon have come out and pitched is phenomenal. Clark Schmidt tonight wasn't great, but was good. Got through.
First start of the year, I'll take that all day long.
Me too. I agree. That's exactly what I was going to say. And then the bullpen is going to be the bullpen. I mean, you know, let's everybody give Devin Williams a break in the first month of the season. You know, there were many a season where Rivera looked a little shaky in the first month of the season and everybody was having a conniption.
Oh, it's over now. The Mariano thing's over.
And then he rattled off, you know, 25 of 27 saves the rest of the year. So, I like the way they're playing. They have 11 wins also, so
they're 11-7 also, yeah.
It's not, you know, get carried away.
Sorry. Go ahead. You first.
So surprise records at this point in the season right now. On the good side, San Diego 14-4.
Nice win today again.
Phenomenal.
Almost at home, by the way.
Yeah. And on the bad side, Atlanta at 5-12. Just wow.
Lost again today. It was, what's-his-face's first start back? Why am I blanking on his name?
Strider.
They're 5-13 now, and you know this is a team that started off losing their first 7 games too.
Yeah.
Interesting stats on the batting side.
Go ahead.
The leading hitter in the baseball going into today was Jonathan Aranda, hitting .413. And right behind him, Brandon Donovan of the Cardinals, .382. Those are the two hottest hitters in baseball. Home run leader, I mentioned Tyler Soderstrom. Judge now second, but then you have Carroll, Tatis, Chisholm, Trout, and James Wood, all with 6. Wilmer Flores led the league in ribbies coming into today with 21. Figured I'd throw that out to you, Kev. And O'Neill Cruz is actually leading the league in stolen bases, not Ellie.
Shocking.
And the guys right behind him, Peter Crow Armstrong, who I've been touting for a long time because I need him to steal bases, and Mangum, who you picked up this week, Kev. Pitching it so early this day. So
I picked him up. He goes 0 for 10.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know,
he stole a base.
Let's go around that. That's having 8 guys out injured.
It's crazy.
You don't want to know who's cold in baseball? Look at my fantasy team. Everybody's cold.
Or injured.
Or injured, one or the other. If they were playing well, they're on the IL. I'm looking at you, Jackson Merrill.
And the guy that's carrying the Dodgers is Smith, the catcher. He's been unbelievable so far. I mean, it really hasn't been neither Ohtani, Freeman, nor Betts is hitting .300.
Well, Freeman is out also with the ankle.
Yeah, he came back.
Shower. He's out for a week and a half.
And then, but Will Smith is Will Smith on base 475. He's been pretty good.
Yep.
All right. Let's move over. Any NFL points?
Well, we're going to do the draft next week. We're going to do a little – the draft is next week. We're going to do a first 12, okay? And the reason why we're going to do a first 12 is so we each have to make four picks. It's not really no random thing, but it covers, I think, Pittsburgh and Dallas at 11 and 12 or something like Dallas is 12. That's so we right. get up to the teams that we don't like all the way through. Yep.
And maybe Gino will throw a bonus pick in.
Gino will throw in a Washington pick for later. And, the whole idea behind it is we're just going to tell you where we think it's going to go. We're not going to talk ahead of time about where it is, so we'll have to discover on the fly a little bit, but we'll have two or three picks ready to make them. It will not be a long segment, but it will be something that just gives you a little idea of where we're going with it.
Do either of you make anything out of the fact that the Giants went to Colorado for a private workout with Shador?
No, I think it's Hunter. I think it's Travis Hunter.
You got to play. You got to be out there for both. You don't want to tip your hand right now.
But they're not taking Shador at three. They're not with the signings they just made. No way.
Yeah, so they'd have to go. They have to go Hunter there.
Excuse me. If Hunter goes two and is not there at three, do you think they're thinking about Shador at that point or no?
I think they're taking Abdul Carter in a heartbeat. I think they race up. I think they race up to take Abdul Carter.
Yeah, I think if they get by two, I don't see Cleveland going Sanders too. We'll talk about it more next week. But I think Sanders could definitely start sliding down the board a little bit.
I think Abdul Carter goes two, and I think that Hunter goes three. That's what I think. But we'll get into it next week, and we'll get more into that. Speaking of Shador Sanders, and I'm going to save this for college football, but I want to make this little point real quick. So Colorado is retiring the jerseys of both Shador Sanders and Travis Hunter. Shador Sanders was 13-12 with an eighth place Heisman win. Tim Tebow, you may not have loved him as a quarterback, won two national championships and a Heisman. His jersey's not retired. But Shador Sanders on a 13-12 record, his jersey's retired. You got to be kidding me. Listen, I know he's the coach's son and all this other stuff, but they've won a national championship under Bill McCartney. It's not like Colorado hasn't had success. It's not like they haven't had other Heisman winners with Rashawn Salaam. It's not like any of that. You're telling me that this guy deserves to have his jersey retired? You got to be kidding me. Maybe you want to say it for Travis Hunter. I won't argue it, but this is a joke. One man's opinion. 13-12.
I mean, Cordell Stewart did more for Colorado than Shador Sanders, and his jersey's not retired. He won two bowl games and led them to a much better record.
13-12. Anyway, I'm sorry. I had other college football points, but since we were talking about Shador, G, I had
to go into college now too.
Okay.
You might as well just combine football now.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nico Imamoglu, okay?
So he's been – Could you repeat that?
Imamoglu. I always fuck up his last name. She's my language.
So do I.
He's getting $2 million. Holds out for more. Doesn't show up for practice. Flies out to L.A. Tennessee finds out about it from Oregon coach Dan Lanning, apparently, saying that Nico's out looking for order. He calls Heupel. Heupel says, we're not going to deal with this saga anymore. Cuts him from the team.
Yep.
And Nico thinks he's getting $4 million from USC, who does not offer a thing. So now we don't even know, because every team now, they have income, and everybody's paid their quarterback now. All right, everybody's paid money to their quarterback. We just had spring practices, guys.
Yeah.
Everybody knows who their quarterback is and they're paying them. So who has $2 or $3 million extra to make that change and have a $1 million quarterback sitting on the bench? I don't know. Now, Nico, for all the things we liked about him, and he played with the cracked helmet in the bowl game, and he was the only one that seemed to show up against Ohio State. Apparently, he didn't want to show up. Apparently, he asked for more money before those games were played, him and other players, not just him and not just his team. But Nico thought because they made a playoff, that he should have gotten more money. Basically, it's all from his dad, Nick, who seems to be LeVar Ball without the personality, right? I mean, he has nothing to add. But he seems to be LeVar Ball without any kind of, anything fun about him. Something's got to change here, guys. The college football, there's got to be either salary cap, there's got to be contracts these guys have to sign. There's got to be something. Because now, Nico was like ninth in QBR out of the 16 quarterbacks in the SEC last year. Yeah. Ninth. I mean, he's a very good quarterback. We all think he's going to be a very good quarterback. He was ninth. It wasn't like he was the best quarterback in the SEC. He was not. So I don't know who's making the offer. There was rumor of Tulane. They dropped out. Tulane dropped out. UCLA is another rumored school. I mean, but I don't know who's going to sign this kid. He's going to get less. He's going to come back out of here with under $2 million, in my opinion, barring an injury to somebody, which may be what he's banking on, guys. Kev, thoughts on this? It's crazy.
Number one, I'm not a big Josh Heupel fan, but good for him for standing up to this and not dealing with it. Number two, from Nico's point of view, and from all these guys also, you know, you're paying for NIL, not per game. This is your NIL. And if you don't want to stay with the team and you start holding up for more money or wanting more money to play extra games or this or that, what, you know, these other colleges, are these players going to accept him as their quarterback knowing that he may be unhappy at the drop of a hat and may want to quit on them too? Does that play into it at all? I mean, you know, he was making over $2 million.
They might like their quarterback on that school, and the replacement of the quarterback could cause animosity among some of the players. That's the one thing I think about too.
Yeah. I don't know. Especially this late in the game. It's ridiculous what he did. If he wants to go somewhere, if he's unhappy, they've got the transfer window, go into the portal. Don't wait till now and do this crap. And then, you know, travel.
That's where he is now. He's in the portal.
Yeah.
The second portal.
Hopefully late.
The second portal.
The whole thing's a mess. I mean, this is exactly once. And again, you know, years ago, we talked about this, not on the podcast, but we talked about it. Once you open the window, it's open. This is it. Once you go down this road, you can't turn around.
Yep.
And now they're going to have to come up with something. And I have a feeling it's exactly what Darry mentioned, which is they're going to come up with some kind of contract that they're going to have to put into play for these players so that what happens when the portal opens doesn't happen anymore. Because you can't have 1,500 kids go into the transfer portal and be switching teams, and it's every year and nobody knows, and it's just a mess. But, you know, listen, we talked about pros and cons years ago. Once this door gets open, you can't close it. But they're going to have to come up with something, because you can't have this, what's been going on every year. You just can't. You can't have 1,300 kids changing teams every year.
And not only that, but the timing of it.
Oh, you know, yeah, absolutely.
For football, it's right in the middle of bowl season. Nobody wants to play these bowl games. All these bowls have become meaningless at this point. College basketball, right in the middle of the tournament, the portal is open. And Izzo's the one that made the point. I'm worried about coaching my kids in the Sweet 16 and the Elite 8. I'm not worried about who's in the transfer portal right now. So that puts him behind the 8 ball when they finally get a chance, when their season finally ends. You know, guys who just lost late in the tournament, and within a couple of hours, they're in the portal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
you had the example. I forget who it was. 13
minutes with the Vanderbilt kid. 13 minutes with the Vanderbilt kid.
Darren.
Some of that has changed.
St. John's?
Well, two other lighter side points here with college football. Number one, for my friend Kevin, Notre Dame will now start selling alcohol at football, basketball, and hockey games.
Woo-hoo. Just what we need, a bunch of drunk Irishmen.
And number two, I saw something about the late, great Mike Leach, one of the fun guys for college football over the years. Mike Leach was talked down from lining up a little person in the backfield and then throwing them over the line of scrimmage in short yardage situations. Now, obviously, here's the point. Other than the optics of what this would look like, don't you think it probably would work?
It's just a variation of the tush push, right?
I mean, but Mike Leach, who's the red gun offense, the whole thing, the spread offense of Texas Tech, brought all that stuff in, all the five wide stuff, wanted to get a little person just to throw over the scrimmage. I just thought it was funny. I had never seen that before. Obviously, he's been passed away. He's been gone a couple of years. And that just struck me, and I was like, oh, my God. I have to bring that up because I thought it was great.
That's funny.
I thought it was a pretty good one. And then we'll go to St. John's, right? We might as well stick in the college world.
Yep.
St. John's now has added three strong transfers. After today, they got Ozziah Sellers from Stanford. They already had Jason Sanan from Arizona State and Bryce Hopkins from Providence. Three four-star, transfer guys that are all known to shoot, which might help the problem from last year. And wow. The other thing was R.J. Lewis did speak out about how hurt he was by the benching in the last 6 minutes against Arkansas and how he thought he deserved the opportunity to go back out there. So
that's fair.
I don't think he's wrong.
Absolutely fair.
And up to this point, there were over 2,000 people in the portal. More players went in today. That number is going to be – so when you say 1,300, G, the football, how many kids are on a football team compared to a basketball team, that number's got to be closer to 3 grand. I don't know the number off the top of my head. I didn't research it this week. But, yeah, I mean, over 2,000 in the college basketball portal. You don't even know who your team is.
No, that's it. You have no idea.
Absolutely. So I'm not going to go into all the portal, the pickups, but I just want to talk about St. John's real quick.
All right. We've gone around the sports world. Anything else, Darren?
I got two quick things. Number one, I'm going to do a minor league baseball thing. The Albuquerque Isotopes did something I'd never seen before, and I watched the video. They scored 3 runs on a bases-loaded walk. The catcher had a bad throw back to the pitcher, so the guy that got the third scored. Then the guy that was on first was trying to go to third. They threw it over the third baseman's head, and he scored. So on a walk with the bases loaded, the Isotopes put 3 in.
Wow.
Yeah, I just thought that was an interesting stat.
Yeah, that's funny.
And
very good. That's a nice
horse
job.
Racing, which is just a small one. First horse has dropped out. Owen Almighty is now running on the same day, but he's running in the Pat Day Mile instead of the Derby. So now we'll see Flying Mohawk be the 85-1 shot that will be running out of whatever post they draw. We're still a couple of weeks away from the Derby, and we'll get more into that as we go.
If he's running the Pat Day Mile, that probably is trying to line him up for the Preakness.
You got it. Well, it's a shorter race, and this is a speed horse. So you're taking one of the front runners out, but a front runner that finished sixth in Keeneland. So he wasn't able to hold it there, so they might want to just kind of rest him for the extra week, run the Pat Day Mile, not lengthening him out to the Derby, and then bringing them back for the Preakness. You're right, Kev. It's the shortest of the three races. Yep. So where a front runner usually has a decent shot at the Preakness.
I have one more thing I want to add, and that is, have either of you seen Banana Ball?
I have.
I've seen it on TV.
It's crazy.
Okay, so this is pure entertainment. This is a baseball. We all agree on it. It's okay.
It's Sports Riders.
Listen, one of the funniest things I saw when I actually was flipping through on this was, do you know the game can end if there's 2 outs in the ninth and a ball is hit into the stands?
Yep.
If
and the fan catches it.
Yep. The fan has to catch it, though.
Yes.
But the umpires are doing flips when they're making calls. It's wild. It is fun. I was in Saratoga last year, and I went out to steakhouse with my dad afterwards, and it was on over my father's head, and I'd never seen it before, and I couldn't stop. I was ignoring my father because it was like something I'd never seen before, and he was like, "What are you looking at?" I'm like, "Dad, I don't even know what I'm looking at. I didn't know what it was." I said, "It's baseball." I thought it was like a This Week in Baseball highlight thing. Then I realized, no, these two teams are playing. Pitchers are throwing with weird motions, and guys are doing flips as they're making throws to first. I'm like, what the heck's going on? It's pretty wild, though. It's very wild.
Behind their back. It's insane, man.
It's pure entertainment.
Every game they play is sold out. They're doing something right. Very entertaining. Harlem Globetrotter-like for baseball. And,
that's it, Jeff. That's it.
They're always on when ESPN does their Ocho shows every couple of months. You know, now they're going to be on there for 2 hours.
It's fun stuff.
Pure entertainment, but fun, I will tell you.
Yep.
For the 15 minutes I had it on, I was entertained.
It's hard to look away, actually. It's weird, but it's hard to look away, right?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, guys, you have anything else before we wrap it up?
Nope.
We covered a lot, but we did it relatively quickly. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin, here with Gino, talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where a guy gets to take the same shot twice on the same hole within like 15 minutes and wins the biggest tournament of his life. Please download the podcast any way you can get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like, Audio Boom. We post a lot of stuff on social media. Like it and please share it. We want to get it out to other people. So if you like what you see, share it. If you don't like what you see, share it anyway and tell and pretend you liked it. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.